Chuck, I hate to mention it again, but I don't think our friend Hector Q. Peabody is going to show up in time for the broadcast today.
Why not, Dan?
Well, I just got a telegram from him. Listen. Dear Shaden and McGuire, sorry I won't be able to make the Hector Q. Peabody show for today, but I have been detained at an important business meeting. We'll try to make next broadcast. Signed, Hector.
Oh, no, not again.
And here's a P.S. I'm sending an efficiency expert over to help you fellas with the show.
What was that last line?
He's sending an efficiency expert to help us with the show.
An efficiency expert? We don't need an efficiency expert. If anything, we need Hector, but not an efficiency expert. What does he think this is, anyway?
You're right, Chuck. I'm not going to stand for this much longer. Hector can find somebody else to do this show if he's not satisfied
with
the way we're running it.
You're right. I'm not going to stand for this stuff
after
anymore.
After all...
Hello, it's the Hector Q. Peabody Show.
Yeah, and without Hector Q. Peabody.
My name's Chuck Shaden.
Mine's Dan McGuire, and what are you going to do about it?
And I'm Thomas Flynn.
That's right, and... Hey, wait a minute, who's Thomas Flynn?
Me, I'm representing Hector Q. Peabody.
Now, just a minute, Flynn, what do you want here?
I'm an efficiency expert, and Hector Q. Peabody sent me.
Now, what do you think an efficiency expert expects to do to improve the Hector Q. Peabody show?
I'm going to speed things up around here, make this show fast-moving. It's going at too slow a pace.
Well, gee, I didn't think it was going at too slow a pace. Did you, Chuck?
Well, of course not. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
Oh, wait a minute,
I'm
Chuck. We better humor him. Remember, he was sent here by Hector, and if we don't go along with the guy, we may lose our job.
Promises, promises, always promises.
Well, all right, Mr. Flynn. What do you think would help speed up our little show?
Well, I've got many ideas, but suppose we begin with the music.
With the music? Well, all right. What's your suggestion as to making the music on our show move faster?
This.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for our guest spot on the Hector Q. Peabody Show for today. This is the portion of our program where we interview people whose occupations are unusual enough to make them interesting. And today we have with us a man whose occupation should really give him a lot to tell us about. Here he is now, Mr. Ernest K. Featherweight.
Yeah, hello, Dad.
No, I'm Chuck, Mr. Featherweight. Dan is out. He went off for some coffee.
Oh, I see. Well, hello, Chuck.
And welcome to the Hector Q. Peabody Show, Ernest. And now that you're here, would you like to tell us about your occupation?
Well, I just told you a little while ago. When we stayed out in the hall, you know, I told you all about it, and you asked me questions, and I answered them.
Yes, I know, but you see, we weren't on the air then. It was just rehearsing with you then, you see. This time, we're talking to the radio audience.
Oh, I get it. That was just practice, huh? You want me to tell it all over again?
If you will, please. Now, what is your occupation, Mr. Featherweight?
Well, I'm a clothes pole setter.
A clothes pole setter? You mean a flagpole setter, don't you?
No, I mean a clothes pole setter. You see, high places make me dizzy, so I never set on flagpoles, just clothes poles.
I see. Well, that must be interesting work. Would you tell us just how you go about being a clothes pole setter?
Well, Dad, being a clothes pole setter is not much different than being a flagpole setter, except I stay closer to the ground. And, of course, I get paid less because of that, which is why I was forced to consent to being interviewed on this program.
Uh-huh. Well, Ernest, how do you set up your equipment when you're preparing to sit on a clothes pole?
Well, first thing I do is to get the clothes pole set up in a horizontal, a vertical position, and then I try to secure it in that position by driving it into the ground or tying it down with rope. Then I climb up on a ladder and get onto the platform at the top of the clothes pole, and then I set.
You mean that's all there is to it?
Hmm? No, not quite. There's a few other little details, like bringing food with me in case I get hungry, and an umbrella in case it rains, and sometimes a couple of books to read if I'm planning to sit there for a long time. Little things like that.
I see. Well, Ernest, tell us about some of the places where you've sat.
Well, Dad, the biggest...
No, I'm Chuck. Dan is the one with the three eyes.
Oh, is that him? Yeah, I saw him when I was coming in here. You know, I thought he looked kind of funny, but I couldn't figure out what it was. Three eyes, huh? You know, I never saw anything like that before.
Yes, but what about the places where you've sat?
Oh, that, yeah. Well, the biggest crowd I ever drew was a time I sat on a 12-foot clothes pole in the middle of the intersection of Hollywood and Vine.
You had a lot of people looking at you,
No, they was looking at the accident. You see, everybody that drove by was staring at me instead of watching where they was going. And 15 minutes after I climbed the clothes pole, there was an accident involving 8 cars and 1 motorcycle. They were spread all over the street.
Was anybody hurt?
I don't know. I saw a policeman coming toward my clothes pole, so I jumped onto a double-decker bus that was passing by and went home.
Well, I'm glad you got away anyway. Where else have you sat, Ernest?
Well, one time I was sitting on a clothes pole that was driven into the bottom of the Mississippi River, near the shore, of course.
And how long did you sit there?
Not very long. There was a big flood about that time, and the water come up over the top of my platform and washed me out to sea. Fortunately, I had my umbrella with me, so I turned it upside down and floated inside it until the Coast Guard picked me up.
Wow, that sounds pretty fantastic.
What's the matter? Don't you believe me?
Oh, yes, I believe you. I just said that it sounds...
You know, I don't have to sit here and answer all these stupid questions. I could go somewhere and find myself an honest job.
Well, all right, Ernest, take it easy. Take it easy. I only have one more question.
Okay, I'm sorry. What's the question?
Well, Ernest, I'd like to know if you have any advice for people who are hoping to enter your profession.
Oh, I certainly have. If you're going to become a clothes pole setter, don't make the mistake that I did when I tried it the first time.
What was that?
Well, I didn't know there was supposed to be a platform at the top of the clothes pole, so I just climbed up and sat on the end of the clothes pole without a platform. In 2 hours, I collected 37 splinters.
My, that's good advice.
And here's some even better advice. If you decide to become a clothes pole setter, go out and take a strong dose of arsenic first.
Well, but won't that kill you?
Sure, but you're better off that way. Well, so long, Dad. I gotta go.
No, wait, my name's Chuck.
Clothes pole. She's
no,
doing...
see, my name is Chuck.
No, you're Dad. I know, because when I come in here, I looked at you, and I could tell by the way you looked at you was Dad.
No, Dan is the one with
you
three
eyes. You don't sound like Chuck does
no,
over
I'm,
the radio.
No, I'm Chuck.
You've got to be Dan.
No, I'm Chuck.
Chuck
well,
is
you?
That guy.
Aren't you Hector?
No, my name
well,
is...
I'm Dan. No,
it,
no, wait a minute.
I forgot what my
Dan.
Name is, but I'm
yeah,
sure you're Dan.
It's time now for another episode in the career of that mastermind private detective, Shamrock Bones, created for radio by Stan Laurel and Molly Goldberg. And now, to relate today's exciting story, here is the brilliant mastermind detective himself, Shamrock Bones.
Since this story comes from case number 5842 in my many files, we shall call today's fabulous adventure case number one. It all began on a quiet summer evening in February of last year. I was sitting in my study when suddenly a knock was heard on the door. Come in.
Are you Shamrock Bones?
Yes, I am.
Mr. Bones, I need your help. I need your help more than you'll ever know.
I see.
You do?
Certainly. I just bought new glasses.
Oh. Well, Mr. Bones, you think you could take a case for me?
It all depends.
On what?
How many bottles?
24.
Well, that's not bad.
I didn't think so.
Neither did I. Now, what did you say your name was?
I didn't.
Oh.
Now, look, Mr. Bones, don't you think it's about time we got down to brass tacks?
For what? I haven't even finished with the carpet tacks yet.
I know, but my daughter is missing, and I'd like to get her home before Christmas.
Why?
She's wearing my only pair of stockings.
Oh, yes, sure. Well, let's get started. What does she look like?
Well, she's about 4.5 feet tall, has blonde hair, blue eyes, and a 4-inch scar across her forehead.
Any distinguishing marks?
None.
How old is she?
31.
31? That's impossible. How old are you?
28.
Well, how can that be?
My wife and I, we love children.
Oh, sure. Sure, naturally. I see. Well, when did you last see her?
A week ago last year. She was sitting on my lap while I was reading the paper. Then all of a sudden she put her hand in my mouth, screamed, and ran out the door.
And you haven't seen her since?
Well, just once.
When was that?
An hour later. She came back and kissed me goodbye.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes, I thought it was.
Well, I'll take the case. He paid me the usual fee. I took it, and I bid him goodbye and went out into the street. It was quiet outside, and about the only sound that could be heard was the asthmatic cough of a poor drunken bum on the corner. As I walked down the street in search of the little girl belonging to the excited man whom I had just spoken to, as I walked past the many high buildings and skyscrapers, I thought to myself, my, these are high buildings and skyscrapers. And then it happened. Someone came up from behind me and hit me on the head. When I came to, I found myself on the floor of a strange-looking room. Oh, my head. My head felt like it had been put through a vise. That wasn't a wise thing to do, I thought. I got up, steadied myself, and looked around the room. Then I heard it. A strange voice said,
"Get over here before I drill you."
Who are you?
Dr. Pullum. I own this place. I'm a dentist.
He was. He had a drill in one hand and a pair of biceps in the other. He wore a white dressing gown.
Now what can I do for you?
I don't know. I was walking down the street when suddenly someone came up from behind me and gave me a whack on the noggin. When I woke up, I found myself here.
Well, what are you looking for?
The daughter of one of my clients. She's been missing for a while, and I've been trying to locate her.
What does she look like?
She's 4.5 feet tall, has blonde hair, blue eyes, and a 4-inch scar across her forehead.
How old is she?
Just a child. 31.
31? I thought you said she was a child.
I know, but I guess her parents love children.
Oh, I see.
Well, I don't suppose you've seen her.
Yeah, I saw her.
You did?
She works for me. She's my assistant. Crazy about teeth and gums and dental work.
Is that so?
Uh-huh.
Well, where can I find her?
In the other room, combing some dental floss.
I'll get her.
No, wait.
For what?
She's very fussy about her work. Can't stand to be disturbed. I tell you, she's just mad about dentistry. That's all she's got on her mind. So why don't you wait for a second, and then go in, get her, and take her back to her father?
By George, I'll do it. And you know why?
Why?
I've got guts. A moment or two later, I went into the dentist's workshop and got my client's daughter. When I saw her, I knew that she must have had a strange liking for dentistry. She was chewing on some dental wax while at the same time she was filling her own cavity. When I told her who I was and who I was working for, she broke down. And then she came with me.
Well, Mr. Bones, I understand you've got my daughter back. Where is she? I'll be so happy to see her again.
She's outside, and since I've spoken to her, she promises never to run away again. But, and this is important, you're never to refer to her disappearance. Never, ever speak of this incident.
I won't. Just let me see my daughter. Bring her in.
Not so fast. There's just one more thing.
Anything. Just let me speak to my daughter. I'll do anything.
You must promise to grant her a strange request. A very strange request, but you must do it to regain her love.
I'll do it, but bring her in.
All right. Here she comes now.
My daughter, my darling daughter, my wonderful darling little girl, say something. Please speak to me.
Wait, remember, you have to grant her one request.
Oh, yes. What is it, my dear? What can I do for you?
He got your false teeth, Daddy. Your mommy wants to scratch your gum. He got your false teeth, Daddy. Your mommy wants to scratch your gums. Well, you're gonna feel good after I've rubbed them some. You're always complaining about your gums. Take them out, baby, let's have some fun. He got your false teeth, Daddy. Your mommy wants to scratch your gums. Oh, you're gonna feel good after I've rubbed them some. Well, you're gonna feel good after I've rubbed them some.
Now, friends, it's time for that new audience participation show, Make a Round Circle. Yes, once again, it's time to play Make a Round Circle, starring that number one comedy master of ceremonies, Happy Harrigan.
Hello again from coast to coast. This is Happy Harrigan welcoming you to another session of that suspense-filled, fun-filled new game, Make a Round Circle. Now, here's how we play Make a Round Circle. We choose three or four contestants from our studio audience. We then designate one of them to be it. The person who is it then turns his back to the other contestants and also to the audience. What happens next is the greatest fun. One of our other contestants makes a round circle on the first person's back. He then colors it. When he's finished, our first person, the one who is it, turns around and has to guess who poked him. It's really fun. You'll get on to the game as we play it. Now our announcer, Harry Horsewhip, will introduce our first contestants. Harold?
Well, thank you, Happy. And here from our audience are four interesting people with the most unusual occupations you've ever heard of.
Well, fine. Who's our first guest?
Happy, here is Mrs. Snyder Catsup from Tomato, Idaho.
Hello, Mrs. Catsup. How are you?
I'm just fine.
Our announcer tells us you have an interesting occupation.
I do?
Yes. What do you do for a living?
I'm a housewife.
Well, that certainly is interesting, Harold. Who's our next guest?
Well, Happy, our next guest, or guest rather, happen to be twins, Arnold Potterby and his brother, Arnold.
Well, Arnold and Arnold, it's certainly a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Harold, who's next?
Well, Happy, our fourth and final contestant is a happily married woman from Vermont. She's Mrs. Conrad Crum.
Hello, Mrs. Crum.
Hello.
Why, Mrs. Crum, you seem depressed.
No, it's just that I got my divorce from my husband.
And?
Well, that's all.
Oh. Well, Happy. Let's go on with our game now.
All right, we will. Let's play Make a Round Circle.
All right, everyone, ready now? We'll have one of the Potterby brothers be it. How about you, Arnold? Will you be it?
Okay.
Now turn your back to the audience.
Okay.
And here we go. Everybody ready? Go.
Make a round circle, color it purple, somebody poke.
Now, Arnold, turn around.
Okay.
Who's got the guilty finger? Who's got the guilty finger?
My brother Arnold.
Well, Arnold, have you?
Yeah.
Listen to the lullaby of old Broadway. The
Yeah, I guess it is. That efficiency expert sure did a good job, don't you think?
Things are going faster every day, you know?
Yeah, I think it's almost time to close the program,
Let's play a theme. How are you there with a theme?
All right, play a theme.
Okay, go.
Okay.
Chuck Shaden.
And Dan McGuire.
Closing the Hector Q. Peabody Show for today.
Let's give the credits.
Right. Choreography by Accident.
Costumes by Pagliacci.
Sound by Marconi. This is Chuck Shaden.
And Dan McGuire.
This has been a CLS production.